The views expressed in this podcast are those of the contributors, not of Q1 Media. Listening to the Gotcha Movies podcast, the official podcast of GotchaMovies.com. I'm Ryan Oliver.
And I'm Jenny Knoll.
How's your day going so far?
It's been busy. I've done an interview for Austin Film Festival today, and I watched two movies while multitasking and doing articles at work. So, really busy.
Nice. Yeah, sounds like a busy day. Completely opposite from my day, because I really haven't done shit today, so...
Well, that sounds like a good day to me.
Yeah, it was fun. My girlfriend and I ran a 5K yesterday, so I'm incredibly sore, so I just decided I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah, I would probably chill all day, too, if I ran that much.
Yeah, it's been good. So anyway, onto the show. What have you been watching lately, catching up with?
Well, I've been watching a lot of Siam Sono movies. I saw Himizu last week, and that is about Japan after the tsunami. And then yesterday night, I watched Strange Circus. I've done some Austin Film Festival movies. My favorite so far has been a documentary called Chicago Girl. And yeah, I'm seeing Rosewater tomorrow. Pretty exciting stuff.
Nice. And you actually get to interview the lead actor from that film, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. One of the actors from the movie I'm interviewing. Yes.
Okay, then I misspoke on lead, but either way, that's still really, really awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Hopefully the movie's good, because I've heard mixed things.
Surprisingly, the other thing I've heard pretty mixed things about since the reviews came pouring in this weekend is Interstellar.
I am really surprised by that. I thought Collider had written a good review, but I didn't read it. It is a very long movie. So
yeah, that's true. Well, like HitFix gave it a really glowing review, but The Playlist also gave it a D. So, but it's also a writer I'm not really familiar with on that site, so who knows. But I don't know, there's been comparisons to 2001, which was not very well received when it came out originally, so we'll see.
I have a theory that it will polarize people with its very long runtime. I'm sure that's not exciting to sit through, perhaps the first time through.
I would agree. I think it's a movie that's, I mean, who knows? We're debating a movie we haven't even seen yet, but it might be something that ages better than one it is initially received.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited to see it still, no matter how many bad reviews come out, because it looks really awesome, and I love Matthew McConaughey and Jessica Chastain.
Yes, I do too. Speaking of McConaughey, did you see the Jim Carrey SNL skit with the Lincoln ads?
No. Was that yesterday night?
Yeah, or 2 nights ago, yeah.
2 nights ago, right, because yesterday was not Saturday night.
No, it was not. Oh, yeah, they're pretty great, actually. You should definitely seek them out. They're on Hulu right now.
I heard from someone that it was one of the worst SNLs. In general, though.
That's what I've heard, too. I have not seen it. I sometimes, if it's not a host that I care to see, I just cherry-pick through the sketches that I hear are funny.
Was Jim Carrey the host?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm not really, you know, I used to love Jim Carrey, but now I'm not really, you know, buying what he's selling, so.
He's a very good public speaker. I did like that one speech he gave at some college.
Oh, yeah, he's a great guy. I just haven't really been a fan of his work in a couple years, I would say.
I would say since I Love You, Philip Morris, and... Yeah.
Yes. Highly underrated movie, actually. Good call on that.
I have a little mini poster right by my head.
So. Oh, well. You're fancy, aren't you? Anyway, what I've been checking out lately, theatrically, I watched John Wick, which was actually a lot of fun, and I know you want to catch up with pretty soon.
I've heard a lot of good things out of Fantastic Fest and just people in general in Austin because they've been promoting it very... largely in Austin through Fonz PR because they're one of Lionsgate's PR agencies and they're located here and it looks really awesome. I have missed my chance to see it for free like 4 or 5 times and now I'm gonna have to pay for it, which I'm not too bummed about. I'm just bummed that I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth your time for sure. It doesn't do anything new with the revenge movie, but it has fun with it, as opposed to being like Taken or The Equalizer most recently and being like super serious about it. And it's got some amazingly shot action sequences, staged really well, like medium and long takes as opposed to quick cutting. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, I liked Man of Tai Chi that Keanu Reeves did last year, and I know he directed that, but I feel like with these directors, he's worked with them for a while, so he could probably definitely get what he wanted to do in the movie across. Because was he a producer on this movie? I'm pretty sure he was.
I'll have to double check, but I think he was too. So yeah, he's got a lot of pull. I never actually saw Man of Tai Chi, but I heard good things about that one too.
It is available on Netflix Instant last time I checked, so it's definitely worth your time. And John Wick looked like it was shot very similarly to the way Man of Tai Chi was. I'm not sure if it's the same cinematographer, but it looked like it had similar lighting going on.
Cool. I'm going to have to check that one out, so, and compare and contrast them. But yeah, John Wick's a lot of fun. I also saw Laggies, the new Lynn Shelton film. I enjoyed it, but with reservations. I think it's kind of a step down from her last two movies, Your Sister's Sister and Touchy Feely, which are also both streaming on Netflix. She has very good at taking like sitcom-y type premises and making them like realistic. And I don't think she was quite as successful with this one, but I really liked Keira Knightley and Sam Rockwell in it. And it was, I'm not going to complain about a movie that I enjoyed. I just didn't enjoy it as much as her other work.
I mean, that's a bummer. It's always sad to see directors that you like, but then have a movie where you're like, oh, it's good, but it's just not there.
Yeah, exactly. Which I've heard some people think that it's there, or at least they felt that it was there, which is great. I just didn't quite feel the love.
Do you think it's probably because you've seen all of her movies, or?
No, a friend of mine who I went to the screening with had seen all her movies as well, and absolutely loved it. So I don't know. I don't think that quite has a factor into it, but maybe it does for me anyway. I don't know.
I definitely want to see it. There's screenings available that I want to go to, but I'm just not sure if I'll be able to make them.
Well, if you can, I would recommend it. I think you would really like it. It's an enjoyable, crowd-pleasing movie, I would say.
I love Keira Knightley and Chloe Moretz and Sam Rockwell, so it seems like a trifecta of great.
Yes, they're all really, really strong in it. And then, as far as speaking of crowd-pleasing, I finally saw Chef now that it's out on DVD. I had about, like you with John Wick, I had about, like, 8 chances to see that movie for free and never did in theaters. But I actually really liked it. I understand your reservations with it. I know you on one of our earlier podcasts weren't, like, the biggest fan of it. But it was enjoyable, I thought.
I don't hate it. I just don't think it's as amazing as some people made it out to be. And I feel like as far as food movies go, because I watch a lot of food movies and a lot of food TV, that it was just on the mediocre level for me. Also, I didn't like Sofia Vergara. Is that how you pronounce her last name?
Sofia Vergara, yeah.
Yes. I did not like her in this movie.
Yeah, I thought she was okay. And I don't watch a lot of food stuff, so I don't really have a lot of comparisons in that level. I like that the movie is basically one big, like, metaphorical apology for Cowboys and Aliens and Iron Man 2. But overall, I think it's a much better movie than those two that I just mentioned. So it was fun. It was cute.
I would definitely agree with that. I've seen both those. I liked Chef more than those two. Also, the food helps.
Yes.
It was filmed in Austin, so ties to that.
Yeah. There was, towards the end of the movie, shot in Austin. So that was pretty cool. And yeah, there's a lot of food montages in that movie, probably more than any movie I've ever seen.
I enjoy a good food montage any day.
Well, there you go. There's a lot. So should we move on to our first review?
Yes, I think we should.
All right. So our first film, actually our only film that we're going to be reviewing on this episode, is Birdman.
Let's go. Walk.
Where are we going?
To get you some coffee. Did I do something to disrespect you?
Not yet.
Look, I have a lot riding on this fucking plane.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. People know who I am.
Bullshit. They don't know you, your work, man. They know the guy from the bird suit who goes and tells Coy's lately vomitous stories on Letterman.
Well, I'm sorry if I'm popular, Mike.
Popular?
You know,
I don't give a shit. Popular? Popularity is the slutty little cousin of prestige, my friend.
Okay, I don't even know what the fuck that means, so.
Well, it means my reputation is riding on this, and that's worth a lot. Exactly.
Right.
Fuck right. You. Yes. If this doesn't work out for you, you fuck off back to your studio, right, pals, and dive back into that cultural genocide you guys are perpetrating. You know, a douchebag's born every minute. That was P.T. Barnum's premise when he invented the circus, and nothing much has changed. And you guys know that if you crank out any toxic piece of crap, people will line up and pay to see it. But long after you're gone, I'm going to be on that stage, earning my living, bearing my soul, wrestling with complex human emotions. That's what we do.
Oh, so that is that what tonight was about? You wrestling with complex emotions?
Tonight was just about seeing if it's even alive, seeing if it can bleed. No, this isn't a backwater rigging. This is New York City. This is how we do things.
Where are you going?
They have coffee here.
Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance, it's the newest film from Alejandro González Iñárritu, who's done, like, really heavy dramas in the past, like Amoros Perros, 21 Grams, Babel, and Beautiful. This is actually a showbiz satire about an aging star named Regan Thomas, played by Michael Keaton, who was famous playing a superhero named Birdman in a series of films. So he's trying to rekindle his popularity by adapting a Raven Carver story for the stage. The film's been met with quite a lot of critical acclaim, but you and I have a little bit of a difference on it, just a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hate it, but I felt like going out, it was exactly what I expected it to be, and I wasn't very excited for the movie going in, and which is weird because a lot of people, I feel like, have been coming out saying, oh, it's something I totally didn't imagine, and I was like, nope, that's exactly what I thought, and it's just there's something about it that didn't really click with me, and I can see where it can click with a lot of people, but I felt like I think the thing that bothered me the most is that I could definitely see, like, the cuts in the movie, and I thought they would be a little bit more smoother, and I felt they weren't. I felt like it was sometimes way too heavy-handed in what it was saying, and it should have ended 15 minutes before it did.
Interesting.
But there are a lot of parts I liked about it, and the way it was, like, some of the parts, the way it was shot, like, I was really a fan of.
I'll give you where it's cut. I mean, I could tell because a lot of those, they just cut on the movement, like, if the camera's moving past a wall or a window or whatnot, they'll cut at that point. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, and you can see it, and I thought it would just be a little bit more smoother, and Rope comes to mind when I think of movies that were cut like that, but I felt like Rope, given it was one of the first of its kind, and it did kind of do that whole wall cut thing, I just thought it was a lot smoother in that, and maybe that's because it was done on film. I'm not sure if Birdman was done on film. I think it was done digitally.
I think it was too. Emmanuel Lubezki, who recently won the Oscar for shooting Gravity, was the cinematographer on this movie. So I think he used, I don't know if it was the Alexa on Gravity or if it was a Red, but I think he used the same camera that he used for that in this one.
There are some parts with the lighting that I really love.
Yes, I actually really loved this movie. If listeners want to read my review at gotchamovies.com, I gave it a perfect 5 out of 5. It might be my favorite movie of the year so far. I'm not going to say that it is, because then if it isn't, Jenny's going to give me grief about it later. But
yes,
but I thought this movie was probably the funniest movie I've seen this year. And it's catnip for somebody like me, because they take a lot of low-hanging fruit shots at superhero movies and, like, Hollywood's fetishization of superhero movies. I mean, there's even a scene where one of his actors gets hit by a headlight, which he claims that he did, but it's mostly in his head. And so he wants his agent, or no, his producer, played by Zach Galifianakis, to get him somebody to replace him. He's like, well, get me Woody Harrelson. Well, he's working on the next Hunger Games movie. Well, get me Jeremy Renner, he's an Avenger. Well, they put a cape on him too? Jeez. Like, stuff like that is really, like, catnip for me.
Yeah, I definitely thought those parts were funny, especially since Michael Keaton was the first cinematic Batman.
He is, to me, he is Batman. I think to you and I, he is Batman.
No, I definitely agree.
We're basically Seth Rogen's character in Neighbors, essentially.
Yeah, no one wants to be Zac Efron.
No, I guess not. But yeah, I think maybe some people thinking this movie wasn't what they expected, maybe they weren't expecting this film from Alejandro González Iñárritu, which I certainly wasn't. I think on its own merits, it is what I expected, but from this particular filmmaker, it's very unexpected, which you said you've not seen any of his previous work?
No, I haven't, which maybe that could be the thing. If I was a huge fan of his and I had seen a bunch of his stuff and I saw this, maybe I would have thought differently. But from the trailer, from what I had read, it felt very predictable to me. which I think is what held me back from really loving it. It's sad, because I hate that that can do that if I can pinpoint a movie, that it can make me like it less, but I feel like with Birdman, it definitely did that, and I feel like, I mean, I'm definitely open to watching it again, though, and trying to maybe like it more and see things that maybe I didn't see at the beginning. I do know that I don't know very many people that have seen it, but the few people I have like it a lot more than me. And then there's one person, the person I actually went with, that he liked it about the same as me.
Interesting. Okay. That's fair enough. And that's interesting that you say that you want to go back and maybe revisit it and see what didn't work for you. Because I actually did that. The first film of Inuyasha's that I ever saw was Babel back in 2006. And I did the exact same thing because I watched it at the time and was kind of like, well, this is really depressing and I'm not really into this movie. And then there's a reveal at the end of how it kind of all ties together. And then I was like, well, this is bullshit. And then was just kind of done with it. Whereas, you know, now I have a greater respect for the movie because I've gone back and watched his other films, which I'd say Amores Perros is probably his closest to being his best film up until Birdman. When it came out, it was kind of labeled as the Mexican Pulp Fiction, which I don't think is like the only apt comparison is that it has a nonlinear story structure with stories that connect within the film. That's the only really comparison because like Pulp Fiction is a comic book movie kind of when you think about it, because it's supposed to be like a Pulp Fiction novel come to life. So it's a very secluded world and you'd believe everybody who come together in it. Amores Perros you do, but then like his later films, like especially Babel, there's a coincidence of how everyone comes together and it's just frankly kind of laughable. And then you get to Beautiful, which is a linear movie, has a pretty solid Javier Bardem performance, but the film seems content to wallow in its own depression and poverty, so it doesn't make for like, it's a very like didactic and very like cold movie, I feel. And so I just wasn't really interested in what he was selling anymore, and Birdman kind of, I don't know, energized my excitement for what he can do as a filmmaker.
What's interesting about that is that in the movie I liked the more subdued and in reality stuff than I liked the super almost fantastical sci-fi elements of the story, like when he's like in his head and he, as you said, he thinks he does all these things, like move items across a table or hit someone with a light fixture. I didn't like those parts as much as I like the parts where he's like one-on-one with characters, like him and Emma Stone, Michael Keaton, and Emma Stone's scenes. I loved those, and I loved the scenes he had with his ex-wife, and I really enjoyed the scenes he had with Edward Norton. I liked those, like, singular stuff, but when everything was going crazy, I would almost jump back from the movie and be like, I'm not interested in this part as much.
And that's interesting, because I still loved the parts, like, because at first it's almost like magical realism and you're wondering what is going on. But then you find out that it is the voice inside his head, which I like that. I like that the camera is basically his id wanting him to like do like, you know, not hold back and do another Birdman movie and like really want to get at them. But I agree with you in that I think the scenes like one-on-one with the other characters are stronger. I mean, I think that's where most of the like show business satire comes in. Like it's a very quick-witted movie. I think I mentioned in my review, I'd be surprised if this didn't win the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay, because it is that like sharp and funny. But like Edward Norton's pretty spectacular in this. I would agree. I would almost say he's better than Michael Keaton. Not quite, because Keaton's more like subdued, but Edward Norton's great in this movie. He's like a Daniel Day-Lewis type method actor. He's amazing.
I actually really liked the Naomi Watts, who played Edward Norton's girlfriend in the movie. I connected with her character, I think, the most. So I really enjoyed watching her. And I loved, there's one scene, it's like in the beginning, where her and Edward Norton's character are just kind of going back and forth, and Emma Stone is hiding behind some clothes. And then she starts talking about Emma Stone's character behind her back, like saying she's weird and that she probably isn't very smart. And then Emma Stone just kind of comes out from the woodwork.
Yes. Oh, yeah. She's like, her brain's fried on drugs. And yeah, just really mean. And then Emma Stone's like not even fazed by it because she just comes to expect it from like that type of people and like that atmosphere. Yeah, Naomi Watts is really great in it. She's in 21 Grams, Inarritu's second film, which is like a solid movie that she's really good in. But yeah, she's really, really funny in this movie, especially because I've heard that she isn't like the nicest person in real life. I know that's kind of gossipy, but I've heard she really isn't. So I thought that was fitting.
Well, that's such a bummer because I love her as an actress. She's in The Ring. She's in The Impossible.
Mm-hmm. Mulholland Drive is one of my like top 10 favorite movies of all time, and she's in that. But yeah, I heard she's not very nice. But if that's the case, then she did a really good job sending up her persona in that movie, in this movie.
Definitely. Oh, another thing, one of the things I said when I came out, and this might insult you and your love for the movie a little bit, but I said I think the movie is smart. I think the director thought the movie was smarter than it is.
Okay, that's... I don't agree with that statement, but I understand. What made you think that?
It kind of has to do with the magical realism, and it's just like the overwhelming commentary I felt sometimes, where it was like, I think he thinks this movie is something bigger than it really was. And like I said, I liked it when it was like more character driven. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that would have been the movie I wanted to see rather than something where it's like, this is a commentary on critics. This is a commentary on superhero movies. Like, it just like, I felt like I was getting like bashed in the face with some of these things. And I was like, I get it. I get it.
True. And I like the satire in this movie can be very blunt. And I mean, the satire in general, but I feel like because the camera is essentially like his bigger like alter ego, and the fact that the actor is making himself out to be bigger and more important than he really is, that really fit the movie.
I definitely think it fits, which is why I do not dislike the movie. Mm-hmm. I just don't love this movie, which I didn't expect to love this movie, so I guess I just got what I expected.
Oh, all right. That's completely fair. Yeah, I was quite a big fan of this movie. Just everything coming together, technical aspect, the writing, the directing, the acting. Again, this movie comes way out of left field for a director like Alejandro González Iñárritu. And the other thing I would say he does well in this movie, and which would be the only similarities between this and his like miserable list four other films, is he's got a compassion for these characters as well, at least the Michael Keaton character. And Amy Ryan and Emma Stone, like he definitely comes down hard on all of these, but there's also a lot of compassion, like especially the scenes with Edward Norton and Emma Stone or Michael Keaton and Amy Ryan, I thought were really strong as well, as you had mentioned. So I liked that he could have his cake and eat it too, basically. And I thought he did that really well.
Yeah, no, I think the movie is a good movie. I think it's definitely solid. I do hope it does not win for editing because that just... it would annoy me, but I would definitely, if it got nominated for cinematography, I could see that.
Yeah, it'll probably, I think it's going to get nominated in almost every major category.
What would you have done in editing? You rendered some shots together.
I don't think it's going to be editing. I don't think it's going to be edit, but I mean, like, it's going to get, I know you're laughing. It's going to get like picture, director, best actor, maybe supporting actor for Edward Norton.
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely see the acting at least getting some knobs.
Oh, man. Michael Keaton's going to get an acting knob, you guys. That should be on the poster.
Okay.
Oh, I'm not cutting that out. That's amazing.
No, you're not. So Birdman, it's a solid movie all around. I can also see where someone probably would not like it though.
I could see. I think this movie's gonna play. I actually think it was Box Office Mojo who had said when they did their, because it had a huge limited opening, like it's New York LA weekend. I think other than Grand Budapest was like the second per theater average of the year, and. Not as high, but it was still really high. Boyhood still might make more in the long run than Birdman, because I think they mentioned that Birdman is like really easy play in New York and LA because of it being a show business satire, and that it may not play as well in the rest of the country.
I think it's gonna play well in Austin. I know that because it's a Draft House Recommends pick, which if you're not from Austin or if you don't have an Alamo Draft House in your area, it's what... they have this magazine that comes out and they show trailers of it every month, and Birdman was this month and probably into the next month's Draft House Recommends pick, where they advertised it like crazy. They had like a PSA on the trailers where it's like, we're going to talk to you about Birdman and you need to see it.
Okay, so it's probably going to play well. Probably bigger liberal cities. I mean, it's already playing in Austin right now, correct?
Yes. And I believe it came out on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it briefly expanded this last weekend. And Seattle, it's playing as well. But it doesn't open to Portland. Doesn't open in Portland until Halloween. But it's slowly making a rollout.
Yeah, I definitely think liberal cities, like you said, it'll play really well in. But, like, smaller areas, maybe even metroplexes like Dallas, I am not sure how well it will play. I know people are excited for it in Dallas, but Dallas and Fort Worth are huge, and in retrospect, I'm sure I'm comparing it to a Texas city that I'm familiar with. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's understandable. So I think it's going to play well in that. Plus, I mean, there's just so much coming out in the fall that it's, you know, for other parts of the country, but it's a movie that's going to get a ton of award nominations and might have a re-release in like January, February. I guarantee that.
Oh, definitely. Probably. And if I know anything about Oscars, it'll probably have a wide release like the week before the Oscars, like every movie that wants to be nominated or is nominated gets.
Yes. It'll have the Inherent Vice American Sniper wide release in January.
Yes.
Yes, basically.
The film which you are about to see is an account of the tragedy which befell a group of five youths, in particular, Sally Hardesty and her invalid brother, Franklin. It is all the more tragic in that they were young. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to see as much of the mad and macabre as they were to see that day. For them, an idyllic summer afternoon drive became a nightmare. The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
All right, so Halloween is upon us this Friday, and Jenny had this great idea for us to do a Halloween-themed episode. But since we've done so much Halloween coverage on the site, which is great, and if you haven't checked it out, you should, our top 50 favorite horror films of all time, and our 13 instant Netflix nights of Halloween. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. So we tried to figure out how we're going to make this Halloween podcast episode unique. So we were kind of brainstorming some ideas, and we each came across two horror films that, number one, have way more in common than we expected, and number two, they're two of our favorite horror movies, and they have a major milestone anniversary this year. So we figured we'd discuss both of them. One of them is one of my all-time favorite horror movies, is The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary, and Jenny's pick is Saw, the first Saw, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary. And like I said, we discovered that these films have a lot more in common than we initially thought.
Yeah, I actually hadn't seen Texas Chainsaw full way through until recently. I'd seen the ending a lot, read a lot of essays. I was very familiar with Texas Chainsaw, and I'd seen it in bits and pieces on TV, which is always edited down.
Yes.
But I was thinking about it while watching it full way through today, and it just dawned on me that Saw and Texas Chainsaw...
Badoomch.
They have a lot in common for the fact that they're both huge franchise films. They were both made on a very, very small budget and just exploded. And the fact that they both are they're very astute to their time period almost, and the fact that they're commentating on like what is going on at the moment, and the fact that they're so visceral and very gory, bloody, and very shocking.
Yeah, so I really think that's actually the thesis of this episode, because that was a great analogy of the two. I think that's a good jumping off point for Texas Chainsaw. You mentioned that both films were commentating on things that occurred during their time period. I know with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, director Tobe Hooper mentions in the film that it's based on a true story, but it really isn't. And he meant that as kind of a statement about the Vietnam War, about how the war was just a huge lie to people. And so he kind of aimed to make the film like that.
Which is interesting, because in contrast with Saw, it's a lot of post 9/11 fears. So I think that's interesting that it's both of those movies had kind of like a post-war time inspiration.
Right, both post-war time and wars, especially, I mean, both of them arguably ones we shouldn't have been in to begin with, would be a fair assessment. The other thing you mentioned, both films were made on a low budget. Texas Chainsaw was maybe not the original low budget horror movie, because I know Psycho was made on a low budget. I mean, traditionally horror is made on a low budget, but it was done so in a way that has really inspired a lot of imitators and a lot of other horror films of its type, like Saw, to be able to be made on a small budget.
I also think that's very interesting in that, like, Saw and Texas Chainsaw also kind of were at the beginning of their own genres, and where Texas Chainsaw is a part of the slasher movement, which Texas Chainsaw really isn't a commentary on it, but it ended up being a commentary on, like, AIDS crisis. And then Saw started its own torture porn movement, love it or hate it, mm-hmm. It did it. And they both are very similar movements in horror.
They are. And, like, it was specifically with Texas Chainsaw more starting the masked slasher killer. Because, like, Psycho, a lot of people credit Psycho with kind of starting the slasher movement, which I don't disagree with. But, like, Texas Chainsaw made the way for Halloween and Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, those franchises owe everything that they are to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
And I think, yeah, I definitely would agree with that. I wouldn't say I liked Texas Chainsaw more than things like Halloween. I like Halloween a lot, but I think that there's something in Texas Chainsaw Massacre that's just so visceral and so terrifying, especially at the end, and I've seen the end scene a lot. The fact, the dinner table scene is just kind of crazy and disturbing, and you don't know what's going on, and it never really is explained.
No, it's a gritty and grimy movie, because, like, as much as Halloween, as terrifying as Halloween is, it's a very clean movie. I mean, in terms of, like, editing and, like, filmmaking and things of that sort, whereas, like, Texas Chainsaw, I think the best way, and I actually did the write-up for Texas Chainsaw Massacre for our 50 favorite horror movies, and I recently made a visit to the Experience Music Project Museum in Seattle, and they had a huge, like, horror exhibit, and they were they had guest curators do, like, documentary interviews. One of them was Eli Roth, one of them was Roger Corman, and the other one was John Landis. And so I watched their one on Texas Chainsaw, and they talked about they brought up Psycho, and they're like, you know, with Psycho and with Hitchcock, you knew you were in the hands of a master. Both Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you were in the hands of an insane person. And that's really what that movie feels like, especially the second half of the movie.
Definitely, especially when you kill off most of the people. And then you're like, what is going on? Is this person going to survive? It also, I mean, but Texas Chainsaw, I feel like, started the whole Final Girl movement, which is so big in horror now, and it's a thing. Like,
yes.
Even with Your Next, like, people say that that was a twist, but it really wasn't, because it still had the Final Girl, and it was just kind of something that Texas Chainsaw really kind of started.
Yeah, I would say so. I can't think of another film prior to that. It's also a very early exploitation horror movie, in a way. I don't think it's entirely fair to say, maybe, because it's not really, like, a total snuff film the way, like, I Spit on Your Grave or Last House on the Left is. Like, not in that regard. Like, those movies are just, like, miserable and gross to the point of not being enjoyable. Whereas Texas Chainsaw is, like, exploitative in its violence, but, like, it's also very confrontational about it. And even the first 40 minutes of the movie, which I've heard some people complain about it being slow, which, yeah, nothing happens, like, violently-wise, but, like, there's something so off in it. Like, the characters are off. The hitchhiker they pick up is really off, obviously. And it's just – it's a really bizarre movie, and then it just takes that left turn when you meet the killer, the Leatherface. And then, yeah, people are killed off really quick. Like, I'd say most of the characters in about 20 minutes are dead.
Yeah, definitely. Once they start hacking away, they're hacked for good. And there are some gruesome deaths. And what's really interesting is, like, the deaths, though, they aren't, that's compared to Saw. Like, Saw, it's very in your face, very exploitive. But again, I feel like it's watchable exploitation. But there's not much room left to the imagination. And in Texas Chainsaw, there is some room left to the imagination, because it was a very low budget movie, and they couldn't do, like, these set pieces that were grandiose, and they didn't have probably the technology at that time, because they just started doing stuff like that on screen. But I would say that also the camera angles in the beginning make it very unnerving.
Mm-hmm.
How they're all very, like, low and very jarring almost in the way that yes. they're shot.
They're low angle and they're also really like soft lit and very like out of focus almost at times. Not completely out of focus, but like just enough to where you're like, something isn't right here. And you're right, a lot of the violence in Texas Chainsaw happens off screen. So yeah, it leaves a lot to the imagination, and people think that movie, I mean, it's a violent movie, but like people remember it as being more violent than it actually is. And it's interesting too, in regards to Saw, exploitation and started the torture porn movement. But to me, who's not a like huge fan of torture porn movies, but Saw, I feel like because it started it, is like almost unfairly put in that category because it's a much better movie than that.
I definitely think so. And love or hate the ones that came after, but Saw started something that was so terrifying for an age that was so jaded by mm-hmm. horror, and J-horror was kind of going on its downhill very quickly because yes. The Ring came out, The Grudge came out, and then it was straight down, and audiences needed something that was a little bit more scary, a little bit more American, more Hollywood, and I feel like Saw with James Wan, he found that thing where people were afraid of torture and people were afraid of the Middle East and people were just like terrified by this idea of being tortured at the time post 9/11. And I think that it was very scary. I remember when I first saw the first part of Saw, I didn't watch it the full way through because I was terrified. I was babysitting at some house and there was like this 1 year old, like newborn, and they were asleep and I was in this room and the door was closed. It was upstairs. It was this weird off room. And I watched the opening scene where they show all of the murders that have been happening. And the one that got me was the one where the really large guy walking barbed wire. And I couldn't watch it. But at the same time, it's shot in a way where, again, it's not super violent. And like the camera is sped up and you're not like watching it like mm-hmm. close up or anything like crazy. But it's just like the idea of having to fight for your life just terrified me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I remember seeing the film and being like really taken and terrified by it as well. And what I like about it too is like people tend to focus on the killings, which again, like you said, are sped up, and they leave a little bit more to the imagination than the subsequent films in the series did. But like at the heart of it, it's like it's a detective story. And part of it, like kind of like Seven in that regard, I think it shares a lot of similarities with Seven. I also think that it's a good character study with the two characters that are stuck in the bathroom. And I don't think the focus is really on the torture. I think it's more subtle, like you said, in our post 9/11 fears than people give that movie credit for.
I definitely think so. And I also feel like when people compare Saw and let's say Hostel, because those are the two big ones, I feel like with Saw and the whole franchise in general, there's something going on there that is very interesting and they're trying to do something. Whereas like things like Paranormal Activity and Hostel, they feel like they're in this like slump where they just aren't going anywhere and they just are replaying the same stuff over and over again. Mm-hmm. And like even Hostel, I don't think it's as gory as people remember it. Also, I think Eli Roth's a hack.
So. Ooh, Jenny Nolfe is calling out Eli Roth. Interesting.
I think he's a very talented producer and a very smart man. I do not think he can make a movie.
I, to be honest, I don't really think I've seen any of his movies except for Hostel. And I think that's probably why I haven't, because I didn't care to after I saw that.
He's only made four. He's only made four movies and one of them's not even out.
The Green Inferno, correct.
Yeah. And I've seen two out of the four of those and I don't need to see any more.
Yes, agreed. Agreed. But yeah, I think Saw unfairly gets lumped into that again because it started it. And I could argue that from Saw 4 to the end, there isn't like much going on, but at least there's an attempt at a story. I would say at least one through three have a good arc, like it crescendos very well. And I like to pretend that 4 through 7 just don't even exist.
Yeah, I mean, those are one-time watches. Mm-hmm. I thought the twist in 4 was a little bit crazy, but it surprises me that Saw is 10 years old, because I just feel like that makes me feel so old. I remember when it came out. I remember being scared. It was one of the few horror movies, that one and Saw 2, that scared me when I was younger. And I don't get scared as frequently anymore. And it's just, I can imagine that when Texas Chainsaw came out, that this is how probably people feel about it. Mm-hmm. It's like, it was one of the first movies that genuinely probably terrified somebody.
Yes, I agree. And I think too, like, Saw is like really one of the few, well, maybe not few, but like, it's our like generation's kind of definitive horror movie that, like, you know, sums up the generation in horror. So like, I see where we're both like, man, we feel old. We saw that movie when it came out. It's crazy. But like, that is a stamp. Like you said, people were getting, you know, jaded on horror. Yeah, you mentioned some of the genres that were dying out. Slasher film, even like the one that Texas Chainsaw started, was dead by that point, because Scream had pretty much put the nail in that coffin that nobody wanted anymore. Slasher films, when it got made fun of so terribly. I mean, not terribly, it Scream's awesome, but like, it got burnt pretty bad.
Yeah, no one can make a proper slasher film anymore. Because the four greats, which started with Texas Chainsaw, are just so good that it's really hard to go anywhere from there. And like with Saw, with torture porn, it's really hard to go moving forward unless you do something really creative. Like Martyrs is a torture porn to an extent, but it's also a home invasion, and like that was post-Saw in France. But I feel like as far as torture porn goes, you have to just like, or like horror in general, you just have to keep stepping it up.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't keep remaking it. And I feel like where Saw and Texas Chainsaw came into play, they were the first of its kind, and therefore that's why people are so awed by them.
Yes, they're indifferent to them because they confronted them with something they had never seen before. And like, quick off tangent, I think a good slasher film can still be made to a degree, but it has to be fused and like hidden in something else. I would argue that The Guest is a slasher movie at heart. Like, it's got a lot of slasher elements to it, but it's wrapped in so many other genres that you have to dig for it.
Yeah, because there's thriller genres, there's sci-fi wrapped in The Guest. And I think that The Guest hones in on all these slasher ideas. And It Follows is similar to Halloween, but it's different in the way that it kind of makes the monster isn't a human.
No. Not human. And it's like Terminator, where the comparisons to that film are going. But it's like, there's every element of it. There's even a final girl in The Guest.
There's a final girl in It Follows, and it's the same final girl.
Yeah, that's what you were saying, which I'm really excited to see that movie that I haven't got a chance to see it yet. But yeah, so I forgot that actress's name. I should look it up. So she's like the new It final girl.
Yes, I would definitely say so. But like, yeah. I don't know. With Texas Chainsaw and Saw, I think they're also very Halloween movies. Back to those movies.
Yes. Sorry, we're getting off on a tangent, which is easy to do with two people who are big fans of horror, that it's going to happen.
But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting how much those movies have in common in the span of time, because they're made, what, 30 years.
30 years apart, yeah. Texas Chainsaw is celebrating its 40th anniversary. Yeah, it's just amazing that despite the fact that they've, you know, branched out, started their own genres, and I guess because of that are very similar films. And it's kind of funny that it's almost like we picked the two films out of a hat. Not really, but it was like, hey, I love this movie, I want to talk about it. And you're like, well, I love this movie, I want to talk about it. And then we start taking notes and be like, holy crap, they are the same in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I would also say that I love Saw, and I stand up for it in every way. But the reason that I really wanted to talk about it is because on the site we weren't highlighting it, because it didn't make the top 50 horror movies. It didn't even make mine when I was writing my list. But I think that there's something so special about Saw that is there. Actually, I think it made number 50 on my list now that I think about it.
I think it might have made my list. I'm not sure. And if it didn't, it just barely missed it.
And yeah, and like, it's not like one of the best horror movies. Texas Chainsaw would easily be up there on the high point, but Saw is definitely an important movie.
Mm-hmm. It's one worth mentioning, and again, one worth defending, because as that, you know, as with any franchise, you know, I have not seen any of the Texas Chainsaw sequels. I don't know about you.
Well, no, because I haven't seen, I just fully watched the first one, and I have this thing about not watching, you know, sequels until I see the first one, so.
I'm with you on that one. I think the only, Saw and Nightmare on Elm Street, I've seen all of them, and Scream, I guess, since there's four. But I've only seen the original Texas Chainsaw and the pretty bad Platinum Dunes remake that came out in 2003.
Is that the one with Jessica
Biel?
Yeah,
it's not very good. I mean, it's better than the Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street remakes, but that's not saying much.
I only saw the Friday the 13th. Oh, and the Halloween remake. Good God.
Oh, I don't even... That's a really sensitive subject. I took a bunch of my friends on the tennis team to go to a movie, and since I was, like, the movie guy, they were like, okay, well, we trust you to pick a movie if we're going to make a trip to it. I was like, oh, well, I want to see the Halloween remake. I want to see what Rob Zombie did. And, like, I came out of the theater just so pissed off.
I did the same thing, actually. I took a friend who doesn't like horror, but I was like, oh, this is going to be great. It'll be fun, because I was very into, like, cheesy bad horror at the time, and that was bad horror on not a cheesy level, but, like, oh my god, what did I just, like, subject my friend to?
Well, yeah, well, because, like, Halloween, the remake, is so gross, because it, like, it's so rednecky, and, like, I know that's, like, Rob Zombie's thing, and, but it's just so, I didn't want that with the Michael Myers mythology. I thought it just didn't fit. Devil's Rejects, sure, go for it. That movie goes for it, and I appreciate it for it, but not with Halloween.
What's really funny is I went to this horror movie marathon this past weekend, and to open, one of the programmers joked, oh, we're just doing a Rob Zombie marathon of Devil's Rejects, House of a Thousand Corpses, Halloween, and Halloween 2. And then they asked the audience, they're like, how many people would actually be pretty excited if we programmed that? Maybe 7 hands.
Oh, man, that'd be... Well, because there's only one good movie out of that bunch, at least to me, which is Devil's Rejects.
I know, I told my two friends, I was like, if they show Halloween, the remake, at this marathon, I'm out.
Yeah, that would be so terrible. And, like, I felt bad for my friends. I didn't feel as bad because they wanted to see Balls of Fury, the ping pong comedy with Christopher Walken and... I forgot the other guy, the guy who, like, is, like, Chris Farley-esque. I don't remember his name. He had his 5 minutes and it's over. But I don't feel as bad, but, like, I did kind of feel bad. I was like, oh, well, they probably would have enjoyed that more because Halloween's not an enjoyable movie on really any level.
The moment I felt bad was quite near the beginning when the kid from Spy Kids gets beaten to death by Michael Myers' child version.
Oh, my God.
And yeah. I was like, oh, God. Oh God, what is this movie? You cannot beat the kid from Spy Kids like that.
Yeah, that's right. That is the kid from Spy Kids. And he doesn't have a really good fate in World's Greatest Dad either, come to think of it.
He also doesn't have a very good fate in The Green Inferno.
Oh no. You've seen that already? It was a festival movie, right? Yeah, that makes sense.
I saw it over a year ago on that Fantastic Fest, and Eli Roth was there. I think it's probably my favorite of his. That being said, I still wouldn't go out of my way to watch it again.
It's funny. I kind of heard, I don't know about that second statement, but at least the first one I heard from someone who has also seen it, who does not like Eli Roth, said that they really liked it. So, I mean, maybe like it or don't like it. I've heard it's definitely his better effort anyway.
It is what it is. It's a... I'm afraid of foreign countries, third world countries, Eli Roth movie. It's what he does.
Oh, so it's very xenophobic?
Oh, yeah. And it even has a little undertone of, oh, look, he tried to help this country while this country tried to eat you.
Wow. Weak. But anyway, I guess back to our two movies. They've had, like we said, they've had their anniversary. Texas Chainsaw Massacre has a 40th anniversary Blu-ray out currently. So if you love the film, I suggest seeking it out. It's a gorgeous transfer. And if you're lucky and you live in a like film savvy city, it might even be playing. I know right now, at least this last week in Portland, they've been playing the restoration at the Hollywood Theater. So that might be something worth checking out. And Saw is getting a re-release on Halloween, correct?
Yes, I'm actually taking my boyfriend to it for our 6-year anniversary because if it's Halloween, it has to be Saw.
Oh, nice. That's adorable in a messed up way.
I'm also a James Wan fangirl. I don't know if this has come up on the podcast yet, but I would marry that man.
James Wan is a really good director, and we just got word today that the trailer for Fast and Furious 7 will drop on Saturday, so I'm actually really excited to see what he's going to do with that movie.
I am not as excited as you are about the 7th Fast and Furious movie, but because it's James Wan, I will probably drag myself to it, even though I have never seen a Fast and Furious movie in my life.
Just watch 5, 6, and then 7 if you are so inclined. I think one of them even has, like, a recap of the previous movies. And that's all you need, because 5 and 6 are the only ones that are fun and good.
that's good.
It's super. Yeah. It's like the opposite of the two franchises we just talked about. It's weird. Like most franchises, like decline with age. Fast and Furious got better. I don't know how that happened. Well, I know how that happened, but it's weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it happens with some franchises. Like, once you get towards the end, they get better. Paranormal Activity, the third one's the best one, and it goes back to its games.
Oof. No. No, it is not. Like no.
That's my favorite one.
I don't really like any of them, but, like, the third one was, like, the drop-off point for me, because I haven't seen four or the marked ones, because I hated three so much.
That's fair.
Two was the only I would say two is my favorite, and I honestly think the only reason I would say that, it's the only one I've seen theatrically. Every other one I've watched at home. So like two, like the cupboard scene really like made me jump.
I have seen every Paranormal Activity theatrically. That's two though, I didn't watch it in full because I watched it when I was working, and so I saw it in bits and pieces throughout when I was working, and I fell asleep. It was my nap movie, actually, because it's so quiet a lot of the time.
Yeah, except for, like, the two, like, operatic moments per movie and the climax. It's, yeah, I would agree. I saw the end of 4 in a projection booth and was like, what the fuck is this? And then proceeded to shake my head.
4 was a waste of my time, and it didn't introduce anything new. At all.
Well, 4's been kind of the drop-off for the series from the sounds of it. Like, nobody came at the theater I was working at the time, and it was a college town, so that's saying something.
It was pretty packed where I saw it, but I also, Sinister came out the same time Paranormal Activity 4 came out, and Sinister was equally packed, and it was its second weekend, so I don't know what that says, but it definitely says that people weren't as interested in Paranormal Activity 4 as they should have been, maybe? I'm not sure.
And I'm making an assumption because I have not seen 4, but Sinister, a far superior movie?
Definitely. That's not even an assumption you need to...
Yeah, I kind of figured. No, I don't really. I've seen Sinister, and it's solid, and yeah, and I had no reason to see Paranormal Activity 4. Which, speaking of Sinister, your favorite movie comes out tomorrow as we're recording this from this year. Not.
Are we talking about... comes out tomorrow. Oh, Deliver Us From Evil.
Yeah. 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 That should cue the Price is Right losing horn. Anything else on Saw or Texas Chainsaw Massacre before we wrap this podcast up?
I definitely would suggest, if you've never seen Texas Chainsaw, chances are you've probably seen Saw. Everyone has seen Saw. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I would definitely suggest it. It is, as you mentioned, a little bit slow in the beginning, and it might not scare you, but there's something really unique about it that you can, like I said, if you want to make a horror movie marathon, not from any of the movies that we've suggested on the site, Saw and Texas Chainsaw would be a very interesting compare and contrast one to talk about with your friends. Mm-hmm.
And if you're a huge film buff and you want to maybe make like a critical essay, or you're stuck in your history of film class, you know, compare and contrast them too. We've already given you a head start on this podcast.
Yeah. Gender, sexuality in the horror film class. I took one of those. Go right ahead.
Oh, nice. That's even amazing that was offered. I took post-apocalyptic film, that was fun, and Spanish cinema, but nothing that specific. That's pretty cool.
Yep, that's how I got my fancy books of essays about horror movies, all thanks to that class.
Lucky.
Which I highly suggest reading, The Dread of Difference. It has a really good Texas Chainsaw and Slasher essay called Her Body, Himself, Gender in the Slasher Film by Carol J. Clover. If you have time.
Nice. I definitely actually did one of my two critical study essays in my History of American Film class on Nightmare on Elm Street.
That's a really good one to do it on.
Yeah.
Also a really good slasher film.
It's great, yeah. It's probably, it's my favorite. Texas Chainsaw is my favorite, or at least the most important. But Nightmare is so, like, personal from my youth. I watched that at an age I probably shouldn't have, but I really like it.
Nightmare, I decided, now that I've seen all four of them officially, all the way through, Nightmare is definitely the favorite. Because I think I like the more fantastical elements. But...
I was going to bring up of the big four slasher films, or the four greats, I think as you call them. Were you including Friday the 13th in that?
I meant the four greats. upgrades, as in, like, the four that are the big staples. Friday the 13th is my least favorite.
Okay. It's by far my least favorite, too. I was curious. You're right. In terms of, like, their place in film history are much, you know, the big four. But, yeah, I'm not a fan of really any of the Friday the 13th movies.
Nope,
basically. Well, I think that might be a good spot to end this episode. It's our 29th episode of the Gotcha Movies podcast. As always, you can check out our news and reviews and this podcast at gotchamovies.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Gotcha Movies. This podcast is also on iTunes, so if you listen to it, be sure to subscribe to us, leave a comment or rating. It helps us know what we're doing right and what we can improve on. If you like this podcast, you can listen to the other podcasts that I host, Over Under Movies, with Octa Ege Kozak and Eric McClanahan, where we pick one overrated movie and one underrated movie and discuss them. And I think that's everything. Thank you, Jenny, for recording this episode. Great idea, by the way, to do a Halloween episode.
Yeah, I love scary movies. It's my forte, so I'm always game to talk about them. Also, be sure to check out our 13 Instant Nights of Halloween series if you're looking for something that looks instant to watch on Halloween.
Yes, we got a lot of great stuff on there. You just did one today for Strange Circus.
Yes.
Awesome.
So there's also a lot of variety.
Yes, too. We didn't do just horror films. The Crow is on there, which is technically not horror, but it is a Halloween movie. So you got a lot of stuff to choose from. So yeah, be sure to check that out. So awesome. Well, without further ado, I thank you again for logging on and recording this. I think this was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love it.
All right. So yeah, be sure to tune in next week for our Nightcrawler review.
Yeah.